Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I need to lose weight. Diet. Deprivation. Misery. Ugh.
What if you could lose weight without feeling awful? R3 Weight Loss by Susan Torberg is the real food plan you've been dreaming about. No calorie counting or journaling. A doable plan for real life. With R3 Weight Loss, you'll break those sugar and carb cravings but still be able to eat things you love, teaching you discipline and managing your weight for life. Visit r3weightlossplan.com. $39 will change your life.
Kid show this hour, kids open forum. If you're a kid and you got permission to dial the phone, the number is 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. If you got a kid and they've been asking you a question that you'd like them to get a professional apologist answer to, we got Jimmy Akin here with us to give out those answers today. 888-318-7884. Jimmy is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers. He is the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. And if you go there today, you will find a brand new podcast about space aliens and people with stuff deposited in their bodies, that kind of thing.
Alien implants.
Implants. And Jimmy's latest book is The Bible is a Catholic Book. Again, the number 888-318-7884. Kids only this hour. How are you, Jimmy?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I am doing very, very well. I've never asked you this, but are there any questions that you fear from a child? Like you're like, oh, I couldn't. That would be too hard to answer for kid, no.
Not in particular, although if I put my mind to it, I mean, anything like tell me the historical details of a saint's life.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Hagiology is fine, but hagiography is hard.
Yeah, yeah. For one thing, there are a lot of saints.
Yeah.
There used to be a lot of saints.
There still
are. Then
there
was Pope John Paul II, and now there's a lot
Way
of saints.
Way more saints, yeah.
You got a whole bunch of saints. Again, it's Kids Open Forum this hour, 888-318-7884. A lot of people who tell us that they really enjoy this hour are not kids. I enjoy this hour. I think part of the reason that I always enjoy the Kids Open Forum, well, there's two reasons. Mm-hmm. One, we have talked about many times before. Mm-hmm. Kids are very generous in that they'll, guileless, I guess, in that they'll just ask you a question. They're very direct.
I love that. They don't lather up the question with all kinds of irrelevant background.
I don't need to answer it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other is that kids' questions tend to be of a kind of a very high order, and they haven't gotten down into the nitty gritty of, you know, a particular council or this or that. They tend to be they're the big questions of life.
Yeah, God give me wings? You don't hear that one from adults very much, but I've heard it from kids on the show before.
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he's omnipotent. He can give you wings. If you really want wings in heaven, he'll give them to you.
Already a bunch of calls, Jimmy. I think we should talk to the youngins.
Okay.
All right. Let's start with Morgan in Idaho. Morgan, are you there with us?
Hello?
Hello, Morgan. How old are you?
10.
Well, thank you for calling. Thank you for being the first caller today. What is your question for Mr. Akin?
Did God create hell?
It is going to depend on what the exact nature of hell is. And this is something that people discuss. The Bible uses images that could suggest that hell is a physical place or a place. And if that's the case, then God would need to at least create the place where these people are. But other people have suggested that hell may not be a place per se. Instead, it may be just a situation where people have turned their back on God, and so as a result of that, they hurt themselves in various ways by making themselves frustrated and cutting themselves off from the source of all goodness. And so it's not so much a place. I mean, they could be anywhere. doing that, but it's more a situation where people have deliberately refused to have communion with God, and thus they're frustrating and hurting themselves. And if that's the case, then it would be more proper to say that the people themselves create the hell rather than God creates the hell.
What do you think, Morgan?
What do you mean by what do you think?
Oh, I do you feel like that answered the question that you had?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good, Morgan.
I like Morgan's perceptiveness. What do you mean by what do you think?
I know, that's a very good question.
It's kind of meta, and yeah. It's also good. It's good practice. Whenever you're not sure what someone means, ask them what they meant.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Good job, Morgan. Really appreciate it. It is Kids Open Forum this hour. Our number is 888-318-7884. If you are a kid and you have permission to dial the phone, or if you have a kid and you want to dial the phone for them, 888-318-7884. Let's go to John Paul in Omaha, Nebraska. John Paul, are you here with us?
Yes.
And how old are you, John Paul?
12.
And is it freezing cold right now in Omaha, Nebraska?
Excuse me?
Is it freezing cold there in Omaha?
Yes, it's snowing.
Oh, cool. Well, that's very
nice.
It
never snows here in San Diego. I wish it would sometimes. It would be fun.
What a ripoff. No snow here.
You can't make snow ice cream like I did when I was a kid.
How do you make snow ice cream?
Well, you take snow and then you add vanilla and sugar.
Oh, that's fun. Have you ever made snow ice cream in Nebraska, John Paul?
No.
Oh, you have no idea. No, now you got something to try now, man.
We made that all the time. The other fun thing in with snow, in addition to, of course, snowmen and snowball fights, was we lived on a dirt road out in the country. And so it wasn't paved. So it had lots of rocks on the surface of the road. And when it would freeze, there would be this layer of ice on the rocks, and it would be bumpy because of the rocks. So there's this smooth but bumpy layer of ice on the road, and I would go running in my sneakers and slide on it and could feel the rocks underneath my sneakers.
Well, John Paul, you got us all reminiscing here, but what is your question for Mr. Aiken?
Did the angel of light who appeared to Muhammad, is the same angel of light that St. Paul refers to? The demon.
Okay. St. Paul does say that the devil can disguise himself as an angel of light. What Muhammad claimed was that the angel Gabriel appeared to him. And Gabriel is a known angel. He appears to Daniel in the book of Daniel. He appears to the priest Zechariah and also the Virgin Mary in the Gospel of Luke. So we know that Gabriel is a real angel and that he's on the good side. He really is a messenger of God that delivers true messages to people. The problem is that when Muhammad claimed Gabriel appeared to him, Muhammad claimed that Gabriel said a bunch of stuff that we know is not true, that he denied elements of the Jewish faith and the Christian faith. And consequently, that couldn't be the real angel Gabriel, because the real angel Gabriel delivers messages of truth. And these revelations that Muhammad claimed to experience were not true. So that would mean that it's possible a different spirit, either not necessarily the devil himself, but another evil spirit could have appeared to Muhammad and lied to him. Or it's also possible that it was Muhammad's imagination, that a spirit didn't appear to him, and that he thought mistakenly that an angel did. Or it could be he just made it up, because sometimes people will make up encounters with angels or saints for one reason or another. So I don't know what happened with Muhammad, other than I know it was not the real angel Gabriel. But there are some possibilities.
Okay, John Paul?
Okay. Well, I was wondering, how did the Muslims get so big, if it was like a lie or something?
Uh-huh. Well, basically what happened was Muhammad was a warlord. And so he, as soon as he made his first group of followers, he started conquering territory. And he conquered most of what's now Saudi Arabia. And then after he died, his successors continued to use warfare to conquer more territory. And very quickly, within like 100 years of when Muhammad died, the Muslim world had dramatically grown in size because of these conquests. And basically, when they would conquer a territory, if you were not a Jew or a Christian, they would force you to convert or kill you. They would say, you either convert or we're going to kill you. And so they made a lot of converts that way. If even for Jews and Christians, though, they would say, you have to be a second class citizen now. We're going to humiliate you and make you pay special taxes and persecute you. Even if we don't kill you per se, we're going to persecute you. And that, and they thus used force to get converts that way, too. And so basically, because of forced conversions is how they expanded so quickly.
John Paul, thank you very, very much for your very serious questions. You are obviously a deep thinker, John Paul, and I hope you will call back again. However, we have to take a break right now. We'll be right back with more of Kids Open Forum. If you're a kid who has permission to dial the phone, or if you're an adult with a kid who'd like to ask a question, the number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We got four lines open right now, so a perfect time to dial, 888-318-7884.
Your questions, Catholic Answers, live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
why
a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to wreck?
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back. It is Friday afternoon. Jimmy Akins here, and all the lines are open for kids. Well, I shouldn't say all the lines are open. I mean, some of the lines are currently occupied.
Yeah.
No, I think about five of them are occupied right now. But you're welcome to call if you're a kid, if you have permission to dial the phone, if you're an adult who has would like to dial for your one of your younger kids, 888-318-7884. The number, Jimmy Akin is happy to take your questions. He's the author of a whole bunch of books, including Daily Defense, The Drama of Salvation, and the latest book, quite popular, I might add, The Bible is a Catholic Book. Let's go to Naomi now. Naomi is in Texas. Naomi, you there with us?
Hi.
Hi, Naomi. How old are you?
I'm 9 years old.
Well, thank you for your call. What is your question for Mr. Akin?
So, in the Old Testament, I was wondering if Lot's wife, whenever the angels told her told the whole family not to look back at what they're doing to Sodom.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, since she turned into a stone, I was wondering what happened to her whenever she did that.
All right, Naomi, what happened to Lot's wife when she looked back at the destruction of Sodom and she turned into a pillar of salt?
Well, since her body was no longer functioning, her soul would therefore go into the afterlife. And the same kinds of things that happen to other people in the afterlife would happen to her. At the time, because Jesus hadn't yet died and risen from the dead, people didn't go directly to heaven. They didn't have that option, but they would go to a place that where they would either be happy if they had been good people who responded to God's grace, or they would be unhappy if they rejected God's grace and insisted on gravely sinning. In terms of what happens with Lot's wife in particular, we can't say for sure because we're not given enough information. You could look at what happened and say, well, since the angel told her not to look back and she did, that would be a sin. But one of the things that needs to be the case if someone commits a mortal sin is they need to understand just how serious it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's entirely possible, because this was an unprecedented situation that, yeah, that she'd never been in before, and the angel looked like a man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the angels are saying, what two guys who appear to be men, yeah, are saying, you guys need to get out of town. And her husband agrees and says, we're taking the family, we're going. And she may not even fully realize these guys are angels,
yeah,
at this point. And she may not realize that she really needs to not look back. And mm-hmm. It's possible she didn't really understand how important it was not to look back. And so in that case, it wouldn't be a mortal sin. Also, another thing that has to happen, even if you know something is really, really wrong, in order for it to be a mortal sin, you have to just say, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway. But when you're out in a dangerous environment like this and there's fireworks going on behind you, you could just impulsively look back without even really meaning to.
Yeah.
And if you just impulsively look back without even meaning to, then you aren't saying, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway. So it also would not be a mortal sin. So it's quite possible that what Lot's wife did would not have been a mortal sin for her. And even if it was, people can repent in a split second, and God can reach people even in the last moments of their life. So just like everybody else, we have reason to hope for her salvation.
Naomi, how's that, Naomi? That makes sense to you?
Yes. And I also have one more question.
Uh-huh.
So in Adam and Eve, whenever in the Old Testament, so what happened to them? Like, they looked back, were they, I mean, they ate from the tree of knowledge, but mm-hmm. What were they saying?
Were they saints?
Well, the church hasn't, the Pope hasn't had hasn't canonized them, but it is commonly, people have commonly thought that that they would be saints because God showed them mercy, like he took away the fig leaf garments they made and gave them better garments,
yeah,
made out of animal skin. So even though they sinned and even though they got punished for that, God still loved them. He still cared for them. He showed mercy on them. And so that could be a sign that they're in heaven. There's actually a book. It's a Jewish book from about 2,000 years ago called The Life of Adam and Eve. Pope Benedict XVI quoted it once. And one of the things that the Book of Adam and Eve, or The Life of Adam and Eve, suggests is that they will be saved, but Adam, because of what he did, has lots of purgatory to deal with, and that he won't be out of purgatory until the last day. So that's a possibility, but that's also just speculation. We really don't know that.
Naomi, I'm very, very grateful for the call. Thank you very much. We go now to Andrew in Windsor, Colorado. Are you there with us, Andrew?
Howdy, I'm here with y'all.
Howdy, Andrew. How old are you?
Me, sir, I'm 16.
Well, thank you very much for your call. Your question for Mr. Aiken.
Yes, so I have two questions, but first and foremost, when Pope Innocent III sent Richard the Lionhearted on the Third Crusade, he encountered a very devout Muslim known as Saladin, and he is held up commonly in Western tradition as a very important figure. Why is he considered so important?
Well, he was considered important because he was the main guy that was leading Muslim forces at the time. And so Richard the Lionheart and the forces with him had to deal with Saladin, who was a military leader. Saladin also, in addition to being a powerful leader of his own forces, he also had some capacity, some ability or willingness to dialogue with people. So he wasn't simply, you know, a brute, someone who just attacked and attacked and you couldn't reason with. He had at least some willingness to reason with people who were coming from a Christian perspective. And that's another reason that he is remembered the way he is.
Andrew, you said you had two, so go ahead.
All righty. So I know several saints, including Saint Francis, were very devout and had very strong self-mortification.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a practice that would be considered proper today, or is that something that simply they did?
It's something that is not impossible in principle to have strong forms of self-mortification. And for people who may not know, since this is a kid's show, not everybody may know what mortification means, but
right.
It basically means doing things that will cause you discomfort. That's kind of like one of the reasons we fast. We fast to show that we care more about God than we do the fact I'm going to get hungry today.
Mm-hmm.
And that also helps us strengthen ourselves spiritually, because if we can learn to resist hunger, we can learn to resist temptation to sin. And so that's what all self-mortification involves. It's doing something that makes you uncomfortable, both to show that you care more about God than being uncomfortable, and to train yourself in self-discipline so that you can resist temptations to sin. But different people respond differently to self-mortification, and there is such a thing as too much self-mortification. The point of self-mortification is not to really hurt yourself. And in fact, some people could physically hurt themselves with self-mortification, which is not the goal. Other people could make themselves so miserable that they find themselves resenting God.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't want that to happen either. So self-mortification needs to be done in a way that's moderate and that actually helps the individual grow closer to God. But because people are different, and because we don't have an outside perspective, we can sometimes get caught up in self-mortification and do too much of it. And so whenever anybody is thinking about doing a self-mortification practice, children, they need to check with their parents to make sure this is okay to do.
Yes.
You don't want to do these things on your own. You want to listen to your parents and do what they say. And the same thing is true of adults when they're thinking about self-mortification practices. Anytime an adult wants to do some kind of significant self-mortification, they need to check with a spiritual director so that the spiritual director can monitor the situation and say, is this really helping you? Are you doing too much of this? Are you doing the wrong kind? Are you really growing closer to God by this or not?
Yeah.
And you want that outside perspective. So with those things in mind, it's possible for there to be individuals today who would benefit from stronger forms of self-mortification, but they would need to do it under the guidance of a sound spiritual director. And most people today are not trained with self-mortification in a way that would make it easy for them to do it and be reasonable about it. So most people today do not engage in the stronger forms of self-mortification.
Andrew, thank you for your call and for your questions. We go now to Anthony in Lubbock, Texas. Anthony, are you there with us?
Hi.
Hi, Anthony. How old are you?
I'm 11.
Well, thank you for your call, Anthony. Your question for Mr. Aiken.
My question is, the angel that visited Mary to tell her about Jesus, does that angel have anything in common with the other angels? Like, is there something all the same?
Well, all angels do have certain things in common. That one of the things they have in common is they don't actually have bodies. They're just their intellects or minds, but they don't naturally have a physical form. Also, the word angel means messenger. So they're like God's messengers, and he sends them on missions to deliver messages or do other things for him. So those are some things they have in common, but there's not a way to visually look at an angel and say, oh, that must be an angel, you know, because they can take on different, since they don't have bodies, they can take on different forms. And sometimes they look just like ordinary people. The book of Hebrews, in fact, talks about how some people have entertained angels. They've had angels over for dinner and not even known it. Because they look just like human beings. So in terms of how Mary knew that Gabriel was an angel, it could be that he appeared out of nowhere to her and said, I'm an angel. And so if she was like looking around her room and all of a sudden someone materializes in front of her and says he's an angel, well, nobody else can materialize like that. Yeah. That would be a good sign he's an angel. Or since angels are intellects, you know, their minds, and they don't have bodies to communicate to each other with, presumably they can communicate to each other mind to mind, or what we would call telepathically. And so Gabriel could have shown up and just telepathically projected the fact he was an angel, and Mary could have just recognized he's an angel, kind of like you just sometimes know stuff in dreams.
Ah, Anthony, thank you very much for your question. It's Kids Open Forum today. There are lots of kids on the line, but shortly there will be two lines open, 888-318-7884.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
Many Catholics ignore the Bible. They say they have the Church instead. But we should embrace sacred Scripture, not just as the revealed Word of God, but as a Catholic work, intimately connected with the Church from the earliest centuries. In The Bible is a Catholic Book, apologist Jimmy Akin shows how the Bible cannot exist apart from the Church, in its origins, in the truths it contains, in its careful preservation over the centuries. Scripture is inseparable from the Catholic faith. This is fitting, since both come from God for our salvation. If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. After all, Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 1-844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Every Catholic has heard the challenge. How can you believe that? Don't you know the Bible says? It's a challenge we have to meet. If we can't reconcile apparent contradictions between Scripture and Catholic teaching, how can our faith survive? And if we can't answer our Protestant brothers and sisters, how will they ever come to embrace the fullness of the faith? In Meeting the Protestant Challenge, apologist Carlo Broussard gives you the knowledge and tools you need to answer 50 of the most common Bible-based objections to Catholicism. Be prepared to give an answer. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Challenge today by calling 844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Purvis.
I'm Monsignor Charles Pope.
And I'm Deacon Harold. Augustine, Aquinas, and Martin Luther King. What did they have in common?
Monday morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
The Gospel. I think they all read the Gospel. That's what they had in common. That's going to be my bet.
Who?
Aquinas, Augustine, and Martin Luther King. That's what they just asked on the ad. What did they all have in common? You got to wait. You got to tune
Aquinas,
in on Monday.
Who?
And Aquinas, Augustine, and Martin Luther King.
Okay. That's one thing they had in common.
I think it's the Gospel.
They also all had Y chromosomes.
Oh, you went that way.
And they were all clergymen.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And all right. They were all human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And they all had four limbs.
Man, it's hard to beat you, Jimmy. You
just thinking out the possibilities.
I wonder what Deacon Harold has in
mind. Oh, and they all had four chambers in their hearts, I think.
Okay. All right.
No congenital heart defects known among those.
Mm-hmm. A lady tried to stab Martin Luther King in the heart one time.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that? It was in New York City.
Other people did things to Martin Luther King that weren't so good.
Yeah, I know. And probably Aquinas. Aquinas definitely, and Augustine as well. Yes. Maybe that's it.
Maybe they were not all assassinated.
No, they're not all assassinated. I just mean they all experienced
suffering.
Kind of suffering. Yeah,
they did.
Let's go to Zelly. She's in Michigan. Hi, Zelly. Are you there with us?
Hi. My question is it right or is it okay to adopt snowflake babies?
This is something, so we should explain what a snowflake baby is for people who may not be familiar with the term. And I assume you're talking about adopting them before they're born rather than after they're born. Is that correct?
Zelly?
Is that correct?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So so obviously, if a child's been born, it needs to be cared for. And yes, you could adopt a snowflake baby after it's born. The question is, before they're born, can you adopt them? And so what a snowflake baby is a baby that was typically created in a petri dish. So their parents did not bring the baby about in the normal way. And then they had the baby as an embryo frozen. That's why it's called a snowflake baby, because the baby was frozen as an embryo. And then people will make snowflake babies and they'll just leave them frozen for years. And there's this question of what do you do with these? And different Catholic thinkers have different views on this. Some of them view it as not okay to take a snowflake baby and implant it in the womb of a woman who's not its biological mother. Some of them would say you shouldn't do that. Others would say, no, it's perfectly fine to take a snowflake, in principle, to take a frozen embryo and put it in the womb of a woman who's willing to have it in her womb so that it can grow and develop and be born. And personally, my personal view is I favor the second position.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, not everybody agrees with me, but I personally think that it's okay because a womb is basically an organ that is designed to help care for a baby at a certain stage of its life, just like a breast is an organ that women have that's designed to care for a baby at a different stage of its life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's never been a question of can you, if one baby's mother cannot nurse him, can you let a different woman nurse him? The answer to that has always been yes.
Okay.
What's called a wet nurse,
mm-hmm.
which is a woman who can nurse a baby if his mother can't, having a wet nurse has always been recognized as totally fine. And I would say now technology has made it possible for us to have the equivalent of wet nurses with wombs. That so you could have an embryo whose mother, maybe not even a snowflake baby, maybe a woman gets pregnant and gets in an accident and she can't carry the child to term. Well, I would say, okay, just like you could take a baby whose mother can't give milk and give it to another woman who can give it milk, in the same way you could take a baby from a mother who can't or won't carry it in her womb and let another woman carry it in her womb, because a womb is the equivalent of a breast just at an earlier phase of the child's development. So that would be my opinion, but not everybody agrees with me.
Okay, Zelly, thank you very, very much. I'm going to keep moving because there are lots and lots of kids on the line. It is Kids Open Forum. Two lines open right now. So if you are a kid who has permission to dial the phone, 888-318-7884 is our number. Maggie in Nebraska is next. Maggie, are you there with us? Hi, Maggie.
She's not, so you get to go next.
Yeah, it's important, by the way, parents, just so you know, there's a time delay, so it's important once your child gets on the phone that they listen to the phone and not the radio.
Are you there with us, Maggie? Hi, Maggie. Well, okay.
Oh, it sounds like we may have lost Maggie.
I don't know what happened there. They're still on the line, so I'm just, Maggie, I'm coming back to you. Don't worry.
But do listen to the phone and not the radio.
I'll be back to you shortly. Let us go then to Anna in Redlands, California. Anna, are you there with us?
Hi.
Hi, Anna. How old are you?
I'm 13.
Well, thank you for your call. What is your question for Mr. Aiken?
So, Jesus and Mary are the only people who ascended into heaven in their bodily form, right?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Oh, okay. Well, my religion teacher, he told me that Jesus and Mary are the only people in heaven who are in their bodily form.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, well, what about Elijah the prophet?
I would agree with you. It says that Elijah, at the end of his life, did not die, and God took him to heaven. And it even uses the Hebrew word for heaven, shemayim. And so it says he went to heaven and he's not here on earth and he didn't die, so he would still have his body with him. Also, another person like that is apparently Enoch, because Enoch did not die apparently, but it says he was taken by God, and that would suggest taken to be with God. And well, God's in heaven, so it seems like Enoch was also taken to heaven. Also, there's another possibility, which is Moses. Even though Moses did die, we have some indications that there was a dispute over his body between the angel Michael and the devil. And in that conflict, it would seem the angel Michael prevailed, and so Michael may have taken his body to be with Moses in heaven, even though he did die here on earth. And who knows? God may have done other things that just aren't, we just don't know about. So the way I approach things is I tend not to make absolutes like these are the only two or these are the only three or four people. These are the ones we know about. But there's a lot of mysteries in God's world, and he does all kinds of things we probably don't even know about.
Okay, Anna?
Okay.
All
right. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate the call. 888-31-TRUTH, the number. Well, let's try Maggie again in Nebraska. Hi, Maggie. Are you there with us?
This is Eliza.
Eliza. Okay. Maybe I have my phone buttons confused here. Eliza, how old are you?
9.
You are 9. All right. Eliza, your question for Mr. Aiken.
Why does it matter if you are Lutheran or Catholic since they're both Christian?
Let me ask a question, Eliza. Do you have Catholic family members and are you Catholic?
I'm not Catholic, but my mom is going to become Catholic.
Okay. Speaking as a Catholic myself, I would say it's important to be Catholic because, number one, Jesus founded the Catholic Church. He was the person who founded his church. He founded it on St. Peter. He said to St. Peter, the first pope, that you are a rock, which is what Peter's name means, and on this rock I will build my church. So he established the Catholic Church. He said, notice he said my church, not my churches. So there's one church that Jesus founded. And even though Lutherans have a lot of good qualities and are fellow Christians, they did separate from the church that Jesus founded. But if Jesus founded a church, he wants us to be part of that church, and he wants us to have all of the graces that he made available to people in his church. And that includes 7 sacraments, whereas in the Lutheran church, they only have 2 sacraments. And another thing, speaking from a Catholic perspective, when a Catholic priest does the Eucharist, it actually becomes Jesus. Unfortunately, Lutherans don't have that ability. They think that maybe they do, but from a Catholic perspective, they actually don't. So I would say, as a Catholic, it's important to be Catholic because that's what Jesus wants, and also because God makes more grace available to us as Catholics. So it's easier to live the Christian life, and it's easier to please God and get to heaven. That's not to say Lutherans can't, but it's easier, and it's what Jesus wants.
Eliza, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Jimmy Akin and Kids Calls. It's Kids Open Forum. If you're a kid who has permission to dial the phone, if you're the parent of a kid who'd like to dial for them, 888-318-7884 is the number.
Call us now with your question.
Hello?
On Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
I might have gone to church, you know, at Christmas time, gradually quit going. It's not as scary as I thought it was. It's a much more warm and open place, and God really is about love. It's not about the rules and the things that I remember as a young child. It really is about the love that God has for each one of us that's so deep and wonderful.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Doing a good job, Nick. You're doing a really good job in there. You too, assistant producer Marie. You're doing a very fine job. Darren's not. I think Darren's listening. Darren had to
Darren's,
go home.
Darren's not here, no, so he's here. Not.
Well, I'm not criticizing.
He
him.
Has
I'm just
a legitimate
saying not,
excuse.
I'm glad you're defending Darren, but I wasn't attacking him. I was just going to explain that he had to go home and take care of his kids.
Yeah, that's a legitimate excuse.
Well, all right. I guess we can accept it this
especially
one time.
Especially his kids are very young, so
yes,
it's not
three
like you
little
can
tiny
just
ones.
Leave them at home alone.
Yep.
They're not even as old as Macaulay Culkin was in that movie.
I can't see the quality of your work, Thomas, but are you doing good today or... He gave himself like a kind of
a
C+.
I'm seeing the light hop from one camera to another. So
he is awake.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Thomas. Is Maggie next? Maggie's back. Oh, I'm so happy. Maggie in Nebraska. Are you there with us, Maggie?
Yes.
Oh, great. How old are you, Maggie?
10.
Well, thank you for your call. What is your question for Mr. Akin?
It was about how the Israelites thought that the ancient Greek and Roman gods were demons.
Okay.
And if that was like true or if they just thought that.
Well, so actually the Israelites, initially didn't know the Greeks and Romans. Initially, they knew other peoples like the Egyptians and the people from Mesopotamia, because that's where Abraham came from. Abraham came from Mesopotamia, and then Joseph and his brothers got taken down to Egypt, and they also knew the Canaanites when they came back to the promised land of Canaan. And so they knew all these people who worshiped different gods. And the idea that they had, they didn't automatically say these gods are all fake, but what they thought was that they are that they're spiritual beings, but they're not like the one true God. And so they would basically put them in the same category as we would put angels. Angels are spiritual beings, so they don't naturally have bodies, but they're also finite. They're not like the one true God who is infinite, and they're created, which is also something that separates them from the one true God, because the one true God is not created. He's not a creature. And so the ancient Israelites thought of these pagan gods as basically the way we would think of angels. But because the pagan gods apparently wanted people to worship them instead of the one true God, that meant they were bad angels. And later on, when the when the Jews began to meet people who spoke Greek and they started to learn the Greek language, they learned the Greek word daimon, and the from which we get demon. And the word daimon originally did not mean a bad angel.
Okay.
Instead, it meant a spiritual being that's lesser than the true God.
Okay.
And so it also could mean kind of like angel. It's a lesser spiritual being. But eventually the word daimon came to mean bad angel. And that's what it means today. And so Christians down through the ages have often said, and you'll find church fathers saying this too. It wasn't just Jewish people. The church fathers would say that the gods of the nations are demons, meaning bad angels. And that's a perfectly respectable opinion. It's not something the church officially teaches. You could also say, well, maybe some of these are just imaginary. Maybe some of these gods are just imaginary.
Right.
Or you could say, well, maybe sometimes there's a demon who plays Zeus, but other times there's no one manning the switchboard at demon in the bad place. And so there is no Zeus at the moment. It's just an imaginary role that one or another demon may temporarily assume.
Maggie, I'm so glad we finally got to talk to you. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Liam in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Liam, are you there with us?
Hello.
Hello, Liam. How old are you?
I'm 9.
Well, thank you for your call, Liam. Your question for Mr. Aiken.
I was wondering if it's okay to play Dungeons and Dragons.
It depends. It depends on a couple of things. So Dungeons and Dragons is a game, and it's a game that involves fantasy stuff, like dragons and wizards and things like that. And it's actually based on Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. I mean, that's where the concept for the game came from. In fact, in the original edition, there's a race in Dungeons and Dragons called Halflings. But in the original edition, it said hobbits.
Oh.
And then the Tolkien estate said, we've got a copyright on that term.
Yeah.
And they changed it to halfling. But it's really just hobbits. So this game was directly inspired by the writings of the great Catholic author J.R.R. Tolkien. And it's in principle, if it's a good game, it's being run well, it's being run in accord with Catholic principles, it's totally fine. It's just like reading a J.R.R. Tolkien book. But it's not always run that way. Some dungeon masters, those are the people who run games of Dungeons and Dragons, sometimes they don't run everything in a good way. And then it could be bad to participate in a Dungeons and Dragons game if it's being run in a way that is contrary to Catholic principles. And so that leads to the second thing that needs to be there, especially if you're a young person. The second thing that whether it's okay to play or not depends on, and that is what your parents say. Because we need to obey our parents, and our parents are the ones who can look at a game of Dungeons and Dragons and say, is this a good game that's just like what something Tolkien could have done for his children? Or is it a bad thing that's doing some stuff it shouldn't? And so I would say whatever decision your parents make, that's the one you should follow.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Liam. We really appreciate that you called. It is a kids' open forum this hour. Jimmy Aiken is our guest. Lots and lots of conversation with kids. And if you want to dial right now, we could probably get one more in after we do the
two,
next call.
Because it doesn't take long to answer most kids' questions.
All right. 888-318-7884 is the number. We go now to Damon in Ohio. Are you there with us, Damon?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, Damon. How old are you?
I am 9 years old.
And I gather you're getting snow in Ohio today, too, are you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, enjoy the snow. What's your question for Mr. Aiken?
My question is that if someone is very ill or in extreme blood loss, how would it be a sin to miss church?
Okay, so let me make sure I understand. You said blood loss, right? So they've lost a bunch of their blood,
yeah.
like in an accident or something?
Yeah, I said,
okay.
I said blood loss, like they're in need of transfusion.
Okay. Okay, so the answer is it is not a sin to miss Mass when you're sick or injured, which is what blood loss is. You've been injured and you need medical care. The church understands that those are legitimate reasons not to go to Mass. And sometimes people, including adults, think they need to go to Mass when they really don't.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if, you know, like, let's suppose someone has significant blood loss and they can be dizzy and woozy and they may think, oh, I need to go to Mass. No, if you have significant blood loss and you're feeling dizzy and woozy, stay home.
Yeah, put your feet
because
down.
You could you need to take care of yourself. You could, if you're driving to Mass, you could wreck the car and hurt somebody and yourself. Or even if you don't, if someone drives you to Mass, you could fall over at Mass and hurt yourself if you're dizzy and woozy from the blood loss. Also, if people are sick and they're sneezing, well, that's how diseases spread, is by people breathing out and sneezing and coughing and things like that. So even if you're, you know, sick with just a cold or something, don't go to Mass and spread that cold and make other people miserable. And especially at Mass, you know, a lot of people are older and they can't fight off diseases as easy. Getting a cold or the flu as an old person is much more serious than getting it as a younger person. And some people could even die from that. So if you're sick, do not go to Mass for your own sake and for everybody else's.
Does that make sense to you, Damon?
Yes.
All right.
Well, what can you do to make up for missing that Mass?
Oh, well, and I'm glad you asked that question, Damon. The church recommends that if you, and this is just a recommendation, it's not a requirement, but the church recommends that if you can't go to Mass for a legitimate reason, that you do something else spiritual on that day, like maybe say the rosary or do some Bible reading or watch a Mass on the internet. You know, you could do any of those things, but you can find something spiritual to do even if you can't go to Mass, and the church recommends but does not require that you do something spiritual to commemorate the fact it's Sunday if you can't go to Mass.
Damon, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm impressed how seriously he takes his obligation to go to Mass. But there is that thing where sometimes we can...
He's being intelligent about it. He's asking questions, you know, what's required? What can I do instead? That shows a really good heart.
Right. I know as a parent, I sometimes... Like, even if you have a sick kid, you're feeling fine, but you can't leave the kid.
Yeah. and that's another...
Somebody's got to stay home with the kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just stay and take care of the kid.
That is another legitimate reason. You know what St. Alphonsus Liguori said is a legitimate reason to miss Mass?
What?
Having to ride on a donkey for more than 15 minutes.
Had I known, because that was my primary way of getting to Mass.
Uh-huh.
And I think we're probably an 18-minute donkey ride from church.
I think it's probably, though, because in order to go on a donkey, you also have to saddle it up and then unsaddle it afterwards.
Yeah.
And so it's more than actually 15 minutes. But what that shows is that even if the church is just too far away.
Yeah.
I mean, suppose it took 15 minutes to saddle the donkey, 15 minutes to get there, and you know, that's like 30 minutes. So he would say, if it's going to involve 30 minutes both ways, he would say you don't have to go.
But I mean, really,
it's still
how holy
good.
Is he?
It's
he
still
wasn't.
Good. He's a saint and doctor of the church.
Oh, okay.
And an expert in moral theology.
And also an opponent of donkeys, a person who had a very negative attitude towards donkeys.
But it's still good to go, even if the church is 30 minutes away.
Yeah, yeah.
But he would say if it is over a certain distance, it's not required, but it still can be very good to go.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Especially this time of year. I just think some people, is very good to take seriously your obligation, but also you're a human being and everyone there is a human being. Don't bring it with you.
And in many parts of the country right now, it's snowing and the driving conditions may be dangerous, you know?
Right. And if you even get to that age where you're like, I'm not sure I can drive in this. Don't.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Or if you're really young and you haven't qualified for the cheap insurance yet.
Right. If you're really young and you're not yet a safe driver and you've got to drive in snow to get there, what St. Alphonsus Liguori would say is,
get your donkey out. Yeah.
And take the donkey to Mass. Jimmy Akin is the author. You should know this. He's the author of the brand new and very popular book, The Bible is a Catholic Book. You can get it wherever good books are sold, including the internet. And Jimmy did a really cool thing. He read the book to you. So if you want to get it at Audible or at Amazon and have the book read to you while you're driving or while you're doing something else, washing the dishes perhaps, riding your donkey, you can go to Audible or Amazon and get it there. And today's Friday, so that means Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, a new episode has dropped, and it's about alien
implants.
I keep forgetting the word. Alien implants. Jimmy, thanks. I really enjoyed doing the show with you.
Likewise.
It's fun to hear you talk with kids, too.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you Monday, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live. In the meantime, don't forget, well, you know it in your heart, Jesus Christ is the light of the nations.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com.
Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.